Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, nice win on Saturday. I don't think anyone had any doubt going into that where we were going to end up, though.
No, but you know, good teams win, great teams cover. That's always nice to see. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. You have to, at this point of the year, style points are important. We were talking about playoff seeding and the like. And I'm serious when I mention that, because sort of beating the spread and winning in a dominant fashion, as we saw, is important, because you sort of have this narrative about Penn State, and you've seen a lot of other teams. You know, Purdue, candidly, we saw, it's just not a very good team, but you can't sort of play down to them. And I think that was important that Penn State win as decisively as they did, just because the other teams that are in the playoff hunt have played Purdue and have had similar results.
Well, let's start with that then. Going into this game, again, everyone expects a win. When I placed my wager, it was a 28.5 point spread. And so I care about that. If nobody else does, I still care about it. But going into this game, Steve, what were you looking for this game? Obviously, we all want an impressive win, but are there specific things you were looking for in this game, and did you see it?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. I think it was looking for a quicker start. You know, we talked about how that had been something that had been sort of plaguing Penn State earlier in the year. They sort of picked up on that, and they came out sort of relatively strong there against Washington. We saw the first few drives, two touchdowns. That's a good way to start. Almost a second quarter slump, I would say, just on defensive performance in particular, with the not stopping a run that they should have done. But they went ahead and they made those adjustments. I was encouraged to see sort of the third quarter really put the team away. We've always talked about how Penn State's really been strong in the third quarter there, and was happy to see some guys who don't get as much playing time really get in there in the fourth quarter and see what they have. In some cases, I was excited. In cases, there's a couple of receivers. One guy dropped the ball, hit his hands. The other one hit his face. Not excited about, for obvious reasons. But those were things I was hoping to see. What I didn't see that I was wanted to see was maybe some shots down the field. I sort of understand that. I wanted to see Singleton play a little bit more. You might have a sense as the carries. It just seems to me that the offense isn't as good or as unpredictable with him not in the lineup as much. You know, Catron Allen's a good running back. I think he benefits a lot when he shares the load more equally with Singleton. So, you know, was a little disappointed there. I wanted to see a little bit more out of Tony Rojas. He seems to be a guy who is getting himself to the play. That's great, but he's not finishing it on the tackles. And I think that came up a little bit, particularly in that second quarter. So that was another area that, you know, I think I wanted to see more than maybe I did. The defense, other than the second quarter, I thought they were fine, but still there were some concerns there. I don't know if it was gap assignment or what, but giving up some runs and sort of the seam on some third and longs where you feel that the team should be getting off the field and they're not. And that was a little disappointing. But these are nitpicky things. At the end of the season, you're playing a team like Purdue that is just not a well-coached team. Giving up all those big plays, it's not just a Penn State, but I mean, that would drive me nuts as a fan. And I'll give them credit for the fact that as lousy as a team as they are, they actually had a pretty good environment at the start of the game. Now, granted, a lot of those people cleared out there in the third quarter. But given the struggles that they've had this year, I think that says a lot to them to have as many people show up in the season like they're having that they did.
Oh, just to hit on the Purdue point, first of all, I'm with you that it did appear to be a decent crowd. The announcers made mention of that, and you could hear them in the background pretty well. I think Gary Danielson, being a Purdue grad, kind of leaned him a little that way as far as crediting the team. They haven't given up or any of that. But the point you make about the poor coaching, I oftentimes say, I think too often the coaches are the heavy, when a team doesn't play well. Sometimes they just plain don't have the talent. Well, it's pretty obvious Penn State has more talent than Purdue, but some of those breakdowns where receivers were wide open, that's not a question of physical talent. Those are missed assignments that if it happens once or twice, you say, well, maybe it's the player. When it's consistent through a game, I look at the coaching.
Absolutely. And particularly Penn State's like first couple of drives. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it going, how is this effective when you have Drew Aller, who's not exactly the most mobile quarterback, pitching it to Ka'Jon Allen, who's not exactly our speediest running back there to the outside, particularly to the left side. They did it a couple of times and got some big chunk plays because Purdue is clearly misaligned and out of assignment. Again, had you had maybe Prabula pitching it to Singleton, maybe you get a little bit more. Can't argue with the results, but at some point, I think it was the third drive, Penn State, they tried to do that. And eventually, you know, Purdue finally figured it out, but it sure took them a while. And the other thing that was astonishing to me is, you know, Tyler Warren, Mr. Everything. I mean, you've seen how much on tape, and to come in there with apparently like no clue how to stop him at all. To me, you know, I'm not sure who that defense coordinator is, but you know, I'm not impressed with what I saw.
Well, and we've seen that a few times with Tyler Warren, you know, going back to the USC game when he was targeted 20 times. At what point does the defense just say, you know, we're looking for number 44, and if we're going to double team him. We're going to take him out of this game. And you know what? We're not sure about Penn State's wide receivers. You beat us. Not this guy who just racks up the numbers.
Right. And that's sort of where I go back to, you know, and particularly in the third quarter, you know, maybe I would have liked to have seen, you know, test these Penn State wide receivers. We still don't know what we have. And I know we're getting pretty close to the end of the season. We're 10 games in. You know, we don't really see them ever go down the field, try to stretch it, and win any of these contested passes. Now, I don't know if that's deliberate. You know, the coaches sort of see this at practice and just figure out, you know, we know what we don't have. There's no sense of risking it. But, you know, we talk about getting to the playoffs and at some point beating a ranked team, which would probably, you know, not going to happen until we get to the playoffs to have that opportunity again after the Ohio State game. It still remains a mystery to me. I think, you know, if you want to be serious about making a playoff run, at some point we have to see that.
It's interesting. I'm looking at the stat sheet and Trey Wallace was the most targeted wide receiver twice. And then after that, Omari Evans once. And to your point, it's an excellent point that you make. I did want to point out, you mentioned the backup wide receivers who did not cover themselves in glory. Anthony Ivey just dropped the ball, long pass, beautiful pass by Bo Prabula, to give him credit. Tyzir Denmark had the ball, hit him in the face mask, not a good look. And what's interesting for our listeners is you will sometimes forward me emails from your dad who has his take on it. And I often get on you as the negative Nelly. You're not even the worst one in your family, are you? It's Dad Pavlik, isn't it?
Well, he likes to point out that he's right often. And I lost a lot of battles with him growing up because he's a lawyer, as you can imagine how those went. But he makes a good point. I mean, recruit some guys that can catch the ball if they're going to play wide receiver. You know, I guess you can maybe teach people how to catch the ball as opposed to, you know, you're either fast or you're not. But that's not good. But that said, you know, Prabula looked good. We don't really get an opportunity to see him throw a lot. And I think it was after the first one to Ivy, he next play just runs in for a touchdown. He was effective. And I sort of what I wanted to see more, because we never again get to see it that often, is can Prabula really throw the ball down the field? And the guys weren't doing him any favors, but he looked like he did. Another guy who played well was it Luke Reynolds, the 85, yes. the tight end? Yes. He looks like Warren physically with a little hair coming out of the back there. And, you know, I think a few more pounds in a couple seasons there, maybe we'll see him resemble him on the field. He is somebody that, you know, you saw when he came off the field after the touchdown and just how excited the team was for him. And to me, that speaks well. It's clearly he's well-liked by his teammates. They were happy. To me, that suggests this is a guy that's really putting in the work and appreciated by his team. And I think we should feel good about the pipeline of talent there at the tight end position. But hats off to Warren. I mean, he continues to impress in all sorts of ways. Although I will point out, I think the announcers actually did a decent job of this. You know, had Aller looked, I believe Dinkins was wide open down the field when he threw it back to Warren. I know that was sort of the design play, but Dinkins was wide open. So if Aller had to look down the field, but Aller had all day to throw. You know, he did make some interesting choices to run. You know, maybe sometimes he decided a little bit earlier, maybe he got a little bit more. But, you know, for the most part, you really can't find fault with his performance, I don't think. And, you know, overall, those are all sort of speak for themselves. But again, you can't just reiterate, Purdue's a really bad team.
Well, you gave me a lot there to unpack. let's start with the tight end. I've talked about the tight end position as a whole, and this is turning into going from linebacker U to tight end U. There's a pipeline. We had it in the past. We have it in the present. We're going to get it in the future. And don't forget, Andrew Rappelier was out hurt this season. He was probably next in the pecking order after Khalil Dinkins. He was next in the pecking order before Luke Reynolds. It was that injury that kind of forced Luke Reynolds here. And you brought up a good point. I've seen him up close and met him personally. And he's got the frame to carry more weight. He really does. And he's got a great frame. And to your point, it was great to see the rest of the team come around and congratulating him on the touchdown. But what I loved was his excitement at it. I love to see that. I love to see that. It means it meant so much to him. Steve, that's just, it's fun to see as a fan.
Well, those guys work hard. I mean, all those guys that got in the fourth quarter, you know, particularly at the end of the year, you don't really expect to get into the games usually this late into the season. Usually they have those sort of cupcake early games where you hope to play. But those guys put in a lot of work. And, you know, I think they should be excited to get out there and showcase their talent. So the fact that, you know, that excitement's coming through, I think is great.
It is. And that I don't know if you caught, I had read this, and then in the game they talked about this, and James Franklin has talked about this, where they will have different players get up and talk in front of the rest of the team. And Tyler Warren talked about when he was a freshman, he didn't know if he'd ever get onto the field. And that's a great statement to make when you have so many young players who see the talent in front of them and don't know if they'll ever be that guy. But if they do put in the work, so when you do see a guy like a Luke Reynolds, now, he came in as a very, very highly regarded recruit. Okay, so there was some level of expectation, but I'm not sure he expected to get on the field as a true freshman. So to see him actually get out there and perform, and I always like, Steve, this looking at the statistic of how many times a player was targeted and how many catches. By the way, Tyler Warren, 8 for 8. Targeted 8 times, 8 completions. Luke Reynolds targeted 4 times, 3 completions. And I understand it's a tight end. Sometimes it's a check down, but those are very good numbers. All right, we're going to continue talking about the game when we come back for quarter number 2. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. This is quarter number 2 of our show. We're wrapping up the Penn State-Purdue game. Huge win. What was it, 49-10 for Penn State? And Steve, I was saying at the end of the first quarter, I was unpacking all the things that you talked about. We were talking about Dad Pavlik sending emails, and you mentioned that you lost arguments to your dad a lot, him being a lawyer. My dad was an accountant, and I still lost all of my arguments with my dad.
Well, actually, my dad's an accountant and a lawyer, so you can imagine my success rate.
Not very good, I suspect. But with my dad, would have our discussions that we called. My mom always called them debates or arguments. But I did learn a lot from my dad. I learned techniques, and I may have shared this story before on the air, but it's worth sharing again now that you mentioned your dad and having your debates with him. My father and I would have these. We're on different sides of discussions. And 1 week it was, he was, you know, side A, I'm side B. A week later, we're on the same topic and he's arguing the other side now. He's arguing side B. And I call him on it. And he stops and he says, Jim, times and circumstances change. So my opinion has evolved. And I look at him and he's cracking up laughing. And he said, just remember that, Jim. It'll come in handy someday. Times and circumstances change. So when you have to back off an opinion, that's what you come up with. And I can't tell you how often I've now done that. And that was one of the best lessons I've ever learned from Dad Galante. But the last thing you mentioned I want to talk about is the young receivers. Ball goes right through Anthony Ivy's hands, bounces off Tyzier Denmark's face mask. I'm probably less critical of that because I just feel like, could you imagine you're 18, 19 years old, out in front of that kind of crowd for the first time, the nerves, you don't just forget how to catch a ball, you know? And I think back to Mike Gesicki, who, if you remember when he was a freshman and young, he really struggled. He dropped the ball a lot. And we wondered, would it ever? I guess to me, that's the one part of the wide receivers game that I worry about the least, because I don't think that's something that they forget. Like, hey, these guys caught 1,000 balls through high school, through practice. They don't simply forget how to do it. So take that for what it's worth, Steve.
Well, did they catch a bunch of balls, or were you just looking at track times? Because some guys just can't catch the ball. And we've seen guys like that come through Penn State. The other thing I'll point out, too, is Ohio State has some freshman receivers, and I don't see them dropping the ball. And that's really what you're up against at the playoff level. So I'll give you my dad's side of the argument.
Well, Dad Pavlik makes a good point, and I concur. And every time I watch, is it Jeremiah Smith, the wide receiver for – Ohio State. He might be the best wide receiver in the country, Steve. He's that good.
Just saying, that's who you're up against. So.
I know we're getting off track a little bit, but I was watching the start of their game, Ohio State's game with Northwestern. Deep pass to him, and it looks like he made a great catch. They reviewed it, said that about hit the ground. But you know what? That was an example of, we expect him to make those catches, you know, that anyone else should say, great catch. Him, how could he not make it? So that's pretty impressive for a freshman.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought the offense looked like it runs pretty well with Prabhul in it, which goes back to what we talked about before, is there may be a more natural flow to Kotelnicki's offense when you have a more of a dual threat quarterback. You know, we really haven't seen that. I think that could open up the running game more moving forward. And I'm curious if Catron Allen, you know, is he really leaving after this year, or is he coming back? I mean, I just don't know objectively, like, is he going to be drafted that high? You know, and I don't know sort of the other guys sort of on the depth. I thought 24, the guy that came in there, the freshman, looked pretty good. Definitely,
yeah, Corey Smith.
Corey Smith, definitely change of pace there. But, you know, I'm curious to see what that offense looks like if Kotelnicki's back and Allen comes back for another year with Prabhula, just because that really does sort of put the defense more in conflict compared with Aller. The offense works fine with that. I mean, everybody has their pros and cons and trade-offs there. But having, we talk about 11 versus 10 people you have to defend, having that threat, you see it. When Prabhula comes in there, it just changes things. And honestly, it looks very good when you have Tyler Warren. I mean, when Warren's playing in that quarterback position, that is effective. And you see sort of teams and, you know, what Kotelnicki's sort of thinking there with somebody like him, and sort of wonder next year, is there going to be somebody similar to Warren? Are they going to have somebody else sort of step in that role? So I don't know if it's going to be Luke Reynolds necessarily, but that's sort of what I'm watching to see, again, if Kotelnicki comes back.
You make a good point there. Let's start with the Bo Prabhula conversation, where and I'm one of those who've been concerned that this season – is part of the window of opportunity for this team. And so many star players will move on. Nick Singleton, Drew Aller, Tyler Warren, Abdul Carter, Danai Dennis Sutton. But what will be coming back, and the amount of playing time Bo Prabhula has gotten, especially like what we saw at the Wisconsin, I believe everyone sees that he is a running threat. But what we're looking for is, can he also do the obvious stuff that you need from a quarterback? Can he throw the ball? Could he throw the ball downfield? And actually, from what we've seen so far, he's looked pretty good. I'm not scared of him taking over the keys to the car.
No, it's been encouraging in the limited chances we actually get to see him throw. And I point out, if you are a running threat as quarterback, those linebackers or safeties have to come up and respect that, which means your receivers have a little more leeway to get open. So you don't necessarily have to be as, you know, in terms of the target windows, necessarily as narrow. So his arm is good enough to get it to guys who are pretty open, because that defense has to respect him as a running threat. That opens everything up. And it's no lock against Aller. Aller's a special talent. He's just a different type of quarterback. But that's something we don't have right now. And, you know, I think the other thing you have to consider too next year is, what are we going to have at the receiving position? I mean, maybe that's another example of an area where Penn State's going to have to do some work here in the portal and NIL to get some more talent there. But, you know, you may get a chance at some of these people. You mentioned some freshmen that can't come in and play right away. Maybe we can get some that do. So,
well, where I will agree is they have to address wide receiver, whether it's portal or I don't see that high level freshman. You know, we have plenty of time after December and signing day to take a look at what they're getting from that. But I believe there's no doubt, yeah, they're going to have to hit the portal for, you know, at least one, maybe at least two wide receivers. But going back also to the Tyler Warren, well, first of all, in this game itself, I said this when I with Chris Buchanani earlier, I think it's reaching the point where Andy Kolelnicki is just toying around with Tyler Warren. It's like, let me think, wait a minute, how about this? How about he get behind center and we snap it between his legs to the quarterback? How about we throw it, do a double pass? You know, he throws it back to Drew Aller and he goes out for the pass. And I think you pointed out on that play that Khalil Dinkins was wide open, and he was. But I just think that there is so much emphasis on, you know, Tyler Warren is such a weapon that's who you look for. And I can't blame the quarterback for looking for him. But is Andy Kotelnicki just toying with everybody now with how he uses him?
I sort of similarly think back to the 2017 season with Saquon. You had a special talent, and there's almost plays designed specifically, sometimes arguably maybe too many, to get them to try to bolster his profile. Or he had a Heisman race at the time. It still irks me that he wasn't invited to New York there for that. And I don't know if, you know, they're going to be, I don't know if Warren's going to get there. I think he should, but definitely a Mackey Award, I would assume winner. I don't know who else would really be in the running to compete with him at this point. So maybe there's a little bit of that. But look, let's be honest. He's effective. Every time it goes to him, it is effective. And that was sort of one thing, too, early on in the game, some of the short yardage. You know, I think there was a fourth and goal. They finally just gave it to Warren and let him pick it up. I mean, that was, I'm sitting there going, why are we doing these things with Allen here? Let's just give it to Warren and not screw around and just get the first down. And I thought he showed some speed on that long touchdown run. That's something I hadn't really seen out of him yet, just sort of like break away there. But that's another element of his game. And as we get to this, hopefully, playoff game, you know, I think that's going to be a real opportunity for him to show what he can do. Because at this point, I think that's sort of an outstanding question I have for this offense. Is you look at who Penn State's played and really who they haven't, and that's really outside of Ohio State, they've really played a difficult defense. And, you know, can this offense actually produce against a quality defense? We're not going to know until the playoff game, because they didn't do it against Ohio State.
You're exactly right. And it's funny, why are they not using him more in that wildcat position, the direct snap as quarterback? Because it has been so effective. And I think what gets overlooked, Steve, is not just he's obviously this incredible athlete for his size, but his decision-making skills. And remember earlier, you know, there's some plays where they have him back there where he has the option to give it up to the running back. He did that successfully. When he's in the short yardage, he seems to have just a natural feel for run hard or at the goal line when it's time to leap or when it's time to bounce it outside. I credit him also for his decision-making skills.
I will too, but just go back to think about what you don't have when it's going to Aller in those short yardage situations. Aller's not really a threat to run. He's not a threat to do a lot of things you just mentioned there with Warren. So if you're a defense, it's pretty easy just to key on that back, which is why, again, going back to maybe the point for next year and having a real legitimate dual threat quarterback back there in Fabula could open some things up that people maybe not be appreciating.
I think you're right. And this, it's not a, and I don't think either one of us is saying, oh, Bo Prabula should be the guy this year. Because Drew Aller, he's a special talent, and I think often is underrated. Again, I realize this is Purdue. He was 17 for 19, Steve, and had a drop.
Absolutely. I hope it doesn't come across as I'm critical of Aller, because it's not. It's just more situational where you have certain things that expand your playbook and your potential for upside in these short yardage situations. That you just, Aller physically is just a square peg in round hole that you don't have.
Yes, exactly. With that said, I think Aller has been much more mobile. We actually saw him run over somebody in this game, which was wonderful to see. But Bo Prabula is just more of a running threat than Drew Aller is. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We've been talking about Penn State. And you know what? We're getting towards the end of the season, Steve. And you can't help but start to look at how the playoffs are going to turn out. Now, I think in the last 2 weeks, it's actually kind of come together. I'm on record as saying it's 4-4-4 is the way it's going to be. Four Big Ten teams, four Southeast Conference teams, and the other four. ACC, Big 12 will each get one, Notre Dame, and the Group of Five team, and that's how it goes. But what's become fascinating is how the narratives are starting. We're seeing it, Indiana with their awful schedule. Penn State's a fraud at number four. You hear Paul Feinbaum, for example, has just gone off, and he's gone crazy. You know, he anti-Penn State, anti-Indiana. And it's an interesting discussion.
Well, getting crazy now implies that he wasn't to begin with. I mean, look, Paul Feinbaum. let's just be honest about who the guy is. Okay, first of all, if you look at him and you ever see him, it's pretty obvious the guy's never been on a football field as a player in his life. Okay, so let's just start with that. Then you get into just he's an SEC stooge. That is the network his show is on. He's affiliated with ESPN, which is aligned with the SEC, which is trying to control the playoff, which has its whole narrative to try to bolster the SEC's case because they're cannibalizing each other. Okay, if you actually look, and I think during the Penn State game, they actually showed the strength of schedule for a lot of these teams. Penn State really isn't all that different than most of the other teams in the playoff hunt. I get that, you know, from a ranked team perspective, Penn State doesn't have any real big wins because they only had the real opportunity there with Ohio State. But again, looking just competitively at the other teams, most of them don't either. They might have had some weaker games than Penn State. I mean, they played, for the most part, Penn State played good teams, not necessarily great teams outside of Ohio State, and they fell a little short. So I work in D.C. I'm familiar with narratives and sort of the incentive structure there. So I don't consider Paul Feinbaum anything that sits out of his mouth criticizing the Big Ten as anything just political propaganda on his end.
Well, it's true with him. And I think there's also – we focus on Penn State, you know, with our show, with who you and I both follow Penn State closely, and the national broadcasters have 100 teams to look at, or, you know, to be fair, the top teams, 20, 30 teams. But what happens is I think they get lazy. They fall into narratives. Now, Feinbaum, he has a motivation, and he is the Southeast Conference stooge, okay? It's pretty obvious. But what we also have, and I bring up this example, I think I brought it up before on the show. I was listening to a national show that was prior to the Ole Miss-Georgia game, and the talk was about Lane Kiffin and his ability to win a big game, and they managed to tie it into James Franklin. Well, Lane Kiffin has a lot of James Franklin in him. He can't win the big game. It's the narrative. And by coincidence, after Ole Miss beats Georgia, I read a completely independent article. Lane Kiffin has left James Franklin alone on the can't win the big game island. And it's just, it's become a lazy, easy narrative to say that about Penn State and James Franklin.
Well, I mean, I'm definitely not a Franklin defender. Anybody listening to this podcast will tell you that. But, you know, at some point over his, of course, his record is what it is. But again, the motivation to that, if you're reading that article on ESPN, then, you know, just think about what the real motivation is here. That's, again, somebody from D.C., everything's always conspiratorial, but I think you ought to consider the broader context as to, you know, where you're reading this and what their true intentions are. That said, I mean, look, that's one thing I also, if you listen to this podcast, know I'm not a fan of Notre Dame. But they have a terrible loss to Northern Illinois, but they have a good win against Texas A&M. And Frank, Penn State's schedule this year, you know, talk about this being the window of opportunity. It's a relatively easy schedule because outside of Ohio State, they just haven't played any ranked teams. Do I think they'd fare pretty well against most of the ranked teams? I do. But you know, against some of these top five teams, you know, we'll have to see. Hopefully we get that chance in the playoff here. But you know, this national narrative, it just seems to me that there's a lot of politicking taking place on the SEC-affiliated networks because they're sort of recognizing that this cannibalization, now that they're actually playing each other, they've tried for years to reduce the number of games they played against each other with this conference expansion, is going to hit their bottom line because they probably won five or six teams. So I think you're probably right with the 4-4-4. Anything outside of that, I could see the Big Ten and SEC at some point sort of taking the ball and going home. I guess eventually we're going to get there with two super conferences anyway, but that's just me. But it's going to make for an exciting couple weeks here in the regular season. And at the end of the day, I think that was the real goal in some people's concern with the playoff is, will the season continue to be exciting all the way through? And in my opinion, it's more exciting than it's been as compared to the 14. There are more teams in place now, and all this jockeying and, you know, watching other games because how it may impact your seeding and home field advantage. I mean, that's exciting.
It is, and I've been a fan of the 12-team playoff since, you know, it was announced. It seemed awkward to me. I thought what was logical would be eight teams, you know, at the time, the five power conferences and then three at-large teams, I thought was logical. And maybe the 12 teams was just about a money grab, you know, to get more playoff games. Fine. I don't care. I don't care what the motivation was, but it has created such interest that if we look before this weekend's games, the Southeast Conference had eight teams with two or fewer in-conference losses, which put them in line to win the conference championship. Well, LSU lost, Missouri lost, which is great because they're both fraud teams. Both fraud teams, okay, Steve. But it now leaves you probably six teams for four openings, which – you know, the Southeast Conference, I think, should look at that and say, hey, that's not a bad thing, bad scenario. Keeps the excitement up for their games the rest of the way. They have six teams who have legitimate shots at the playoffs. But now also just flipping over to the schedule strengths, what's fascinating is with the Southeast Conference, the differences in schedules between the top teams. Now, Georgia, who has two losses, has Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, and by the way, Clemson out of conference on their schedule. Texas, do you know who Texas's best win is against? Take your pick, Michigan or Oklahoma.
There you go. It'd be great if A&M beat them.
It's going to be fascinating. You know, A&M, you know who their best win is?
Nope, I know they lost to Notre Dame, which is probably what all the Notre Dame people are holding their hat on.
They are, but A&M's best win is against LSU. So when A&M plays Texas, that's probably the first opportunity for either one of them to get a win against a ranked team. And the loser with two losses will not have a win against a ranked team.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
No, I know. I'm just trying to think of like the Big Ten. I think we sort of know who the four teams are. And you know, I'm curious to see, just looking ahead to this week outside of Penn State. And don't kid yourself, Minnesota, I mean, Franklin's gone out there and lost before when he shouldn't have. He's capable of losing anybody. So, that, you know, I'm not putting that as a slam dunk. But how does Indiana look against Ohio State? Because Indiana hasn't really played anybody either. And so I think that's going to be sort of a question if you're on the committee and you're sort of judging, you know, the three or four teams there is, you know, is Indiana competitive against Ohio State?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because going into this weekend's games, I said there were three games left in the season that would really affect the playoffs, barring upsets. And we'll talk about, speaking of upsets, we'll talk about Penn State, Minnesota in the fourth quarter. But the three games were Georgia played Tennessee this past weekend, and Georgia essentially, you know, saved their playoff hopes by winning that game because they couldn't afford a third loss. And then Indiana is going to play Ohio State next week. I'm curious your take on it. Mine is, if Indiana wins, that would be crazy, but Ohio State would still be a playoff team, because that meant Ohio State's two losses are two undefeated teams. But I think more likely Ohio State's going to win the game, but I think it's going to matter how much what that span. If it's within two touchdowns, even, you know, Ohio State winning the game kind of handily, but it's, you know, 30-16 or 30-17, something like that, I think it's okay. If Indiana gets boat raced, though, I think they're in trouble.
I think so. Then you may be looking at Penn or the Big Ten only having three teams in there potentially. Yes. But look, you're going to hear this criticism from ESPN, the SEC affiliated network. Okay, if it's a close game, then it's going to be Ohio State's a fraud, that Indiana's not that good. Particularly if Indiana were to somehow upset them. And then if Ohio State just sort of dominates them, then it's sort of, well, Indiana's no good. We told you about this. This network or the Big Ten's not any good outside of Ohio State and Oregon. That's, I mean, their interest to whatever get as many SEC teams in the playoffs as they can. So my advice is just not listen to ESPN.
Which I think has been the case with a lot of folks. The other big game that's left is the last week of the season. You have Texas playing Texas A&M. Now, they each have one loss in the Southeast Conference. A&M has that second loss against Notre Dame. So, obviously, if A&M loses, it's their third overall loss. They are no longer a factor in the playoffs. Texas, though, I think if Texas loses, even though they're ranked third, they're left with very little, if anything, on the resume. They might be the odd man out in the Southeast Conference.
Well, you'd have to tell me, if that were to happen, who would be playing in the SEC championship? Would Texas be out of it at that point? Because if they were playing in it again, then they would obviously have an opportunity, I guess, to get a quality win there. But, you know, I just sort of go back to, if I recall as a kid, Texas and A&M used to play on Thanksgiving night. And I really wish that they were still doing that. I used to look forward to that. That game always meant a lot down there. It seems it would mean even more this year. And also wouldn't have to compete with a lot of other good games that day. But you know, maybe someday they'll get back to that.
Well, you're showing a little bit of age there. I will go back even further. Thanksgiving weekend. I've been talking about Dad Galante with you. But Penn State used to play Pitt on Thanksgiving Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And that was like my dad and my favorite day. We had Thanksgiving leftovers, eat in front of the TV, and watch Penn State Pitt, Steve. It didn't get better than that.
my earliest memories are going to Johnstown and my dad leaving me at his parents' place and going up with my uncles to the Penn State game.
Is that right? So you have abandonment issues. Dad would leave you. All right. We're gonna talk more about future games when we come back for quarter number four. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show, and we're talking between segments. This is Dad Galanti and Dad Pavlik version of our show, isn't it?
It appears that way.
Well, I think we both have to give credit or blame to our dads for a lot of our personalities.
We'll leave it up to the listeners to decide which is which.
Well, I was going to say, leave it up to our dads. I'll give you one more Dad Galanti quote. And he, as we became adults and hopefully more responsible with things, my father would say to me, "Isn't it funny, Jim? The older you get, the smarter your father becomes." So I hate to admit it, but he was right about that.
It was a Mark Twain quote to that effect. But, you know, 17, you know, my dad was an idiot. And by the time I was 24, it was remarkable how much he learned in those 7 years. I'm butchering it, but you get the idea.
I think that is exactly it. Dare I say that has something to do with maturity? Nah, can't be. Can't be that. All right, Steve, a couple games left. You know, we've been saying with Penn State, they just need to finish out the season, do what they're supposed to do. They got through Washington. I thought they got through them really well. They got through this Purdue game as we expected. But, you know, they needed style points, and I think they got that. They took care of business. Now we got to look ahead. It's Minnesota on the road, Maryland at home. Pretty much anyone I talk to is not concerned about Maryland. Watch that come back to bite us. But there is concern about going on the road to play Minnesota. What's your level of concern?
Well, I live in Maryland. You know, I definitely don't root for them. I just wonder, though, I mean, Franklin's lost twice to them at State College. I mean, that's like twice, if I'm recalling correctly, like two times more than like the last 70 years of coaching at Penn State. I mean, somebody can check me on that, but I know O'Brien didn't lose to him, and did Paterno? Not in my lifetime. But you draw your own conclusions there. That said, I believe Maryland lost to Rutgers. I mean, they should be packing it in. But again, it's happened twice before. It shouldn't have happened. So I don't take anything for granted, particularly with Franklin, which brings me to Minnesota. I mean, they've gone out there and lost a game they shouldn't have before when they had a lot to play for, and that ruined their season. So you hope the guy learned something from that. One area that we've seen improvement more recently, i.e. the past couple of years, it's argued took 9 years to get to that point, but he appears to be better now about not losing to teams he's favored and has more talent than. So hopefully you can sort of keep these guys motivated compared to last year's, where their playoff, in most cases, aspirations were sort of over at this point. You really have to finish strong, and that should be enough motivation to go out there and do what you need to do. But you have matchup issues. You know, Minnesota is a much different team than Maryland. I think Minnesota, I sort of think of, very physical. And you know, Penn State's proven better this year, I think, in matching up against some of those teams with like Illinois and Wisconsin. I don't know that Minnesota should be much different than them from a talent perspective. You have to go out there, win there, and deliver. And then Maryland, you know, it was interesting. They actually played Oregon pretty tough. But they're sort of more, I think, the opposite, sort of the talent maybe more at the skill positions in the speed area. And you know, that's sort of where I think Penn State still should have an advantage there. And I think playing at home should be enough to overcome that. But again, I just go back to Franklin's lost both those games at State College. So it's a concern.
Well, I'm going to set Maryland aside because I also think there's the nature of it, that last game, and especially in-state college. I think Maryland will have pretty much packed it in for the season. It won't. I know it's Penn State. It's a rival. It would be a great win for them, you know, all of that. But I think after a tough season, end of year, you know, Penn State's depth, all those things add up to, boy, they better not lose to Maryland at home with the playoff game at stake, Steve.
Well, for both games, the key is getting up and having an early start. That's something Penn State's done better the past couple games with respect to this game against Purdue in Washington. You know, we talked about them sort of being the second half team, which is just a nice way of saying you're starting slow. And I think if they can go out and establish an early lead, you know, these teams don't have as much to play for. They probably are heading in to these things, probably expecting to lose if they're being honest with themselves. And so that's really important. But that said, the opposite is true. If Penn State starts slow, gets some early turnovers, and lets these teams get some early leads, then suddenly these guys think they can win. And this is their season. Nothing would make them feel better than knocking off the number four team in the country. And from that standpoint, they may be giving Penn State, you know, all they got because they have nothing else to play for. And so, you know, I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss that. But that goes back to, you know, what's been encouraging the past couple of weeks is the quicker starts here.
Well, I'm with you. I do have some concerns with Minnesota. It is on the road, you know, back-to-back games on the road is going on. And if you give them an opportunity and their home crowd an opportunity to have hope, which is, you know, that by starting slow. And you're right. And where I feel more confident about in this game is in the last couple of years, yes, Penn State has won all the games that they were supposed to win. They are supposed to beat Minnesota. I like the better diversity of the Penn State offense now, that they can beat you with the running game, with the passing game. I think Drew Aller now is again, 17 for 19 throwing the ball, which is phenomenal. But also his ability now, Purdue had zero sacks, but part of that was Drew Aller's ability to scramble and create something where I think a year ago that might not have been the case. So a team like Minnesota, you know, might have been able to stop a drive where this year Drew Aller may be able to extend it.
And I have a lot of confidence based on how I saw Aller lead the team back against USC. I guess one question for you, did Minnesota play this past weekend or do they have a bye? They have an extra week to prepare for Penn State? Because I was sort of looking for them yesterday. I don't recall seeing a score. So I'll give you a chance to check for that. Because if you give Fleck another week, yeah, well, you have 2 weeks to prepare for this game too. And, you know, obviously Fleck is who he is. I think it's the last game, probably home game for them. And there's probably added motivation on their standpoint.
And it is the last home game for them. So, yeah, I do think that there's motivation there. And is it, you know, false confidence on my part that, you know, it's a different team than it was before, Steve?
No, I mean, you're right to point out that offensively they have a much more balanced approach. And Aller, let's just be honest, he's in a better equipped to lead a team to a comeback than they were, I think it was 19 when they blew it the last time they were there with Clifford. That said, just because that's what we saw the last time they went to Minnesota, I believe. Is that the last time they played there?
I remember. They played them at home. You know, I believe they had a whiteout game with them at home.
He did. And I think they was on their like backup quarterback as well. I mean, I'm just saying, I wouldn't dismiss this game. You can't have a look ahead game against Minnesota. You know, so far this year, you know, the teams for the most part outside of the beginning of the season, you know, I think has played the Bowling Green game. That's sort of the only time I really saw like a clear look ahead or just sort of a letdown. I think the team's gotten better about that. But just because I've seen it before, I can't get that memory, that painful memory out of my head.
I am sure James Franklin can't get it out of his head either. I think also I believe the Penn State team is better now. I think their defense is better now than it was like when that Bowling Green game. And I don't, I'm sure there's several pieces to it. You know, Tom Allen getting more conditioned to the players that he now has and vice versa, the players getting more used to Tom Allen. But also I think a big part of it is Abdul Carter just seems to be so much more comfortable now at defensive end. And if Denayen Sutton is healthy, that adds to it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, I think the team's playing the best ball that they have all season, which is encouraging, is sort of hitting your stride towards the end, heading into the playoffs. The only reason to sort of hesitate there is I really don't think Purdue or Washington are any good. So there's that sort of outstanding question of, you know, is Penn State looking really that much better or really just the competition? I think we'll get a better sense of that against Minnesota. But I agree. I think Carter's taken strides. We mentioned at the beginning of the season that this was a new position. I think there were a lot of times at the beginning of the season it very much looked like that. Going back to the Purdue game, though, that was one sort of thing I thought that we would saw more out of the defense, more sacks earlier in the game, a little more pressure there. So I think being able to get home on Saturday is going to be really important to try to get up on these guys and really put this game away. But Carter, I mean, he's getting better against the run. He had a nice play on the game Saturday against Purdue, and he had a really nice play when he actually tackled the guy, chased him down there on a screen pass. I know that the commentators made a point of noting that, but that is something you really don't see. And if you're wondering why this guy's going to get drafted as high as he is, it's things like that.
You're exactly right. And the physical tools are obvious. But what I really appreciated seeing on against Purdue was going into the game, what I was looking for was the clean game, the execution. What that means is don't shoot yourself in the foot with penalties. Don't on defense give up a third and long or commit the penalty that gives them a first down. And on your side, I think that it comes into the execution on third down. Don't drop the third down pass that would have given you a first down. Don't do those things. And it was pretty evident. Their first two drives, they executed really well, marched right down the field. And I think I have the drive chart in front of me. I think it was like six out of the first eight drives ended up in touchdowns. So they weren't shooting themselves in the foot, which is how you end up losing to an inferior team.
Right. And getting touchdowns as opposed to field goals, that's something that really came back to haunt them in the Ohio State game. So if you want to finish the season strong, start both these games with the way you should, get some commanding leads, put them away, get ready for that bye week, and find out if you're going to play in the playoff.
I didn't tell you ahead of time I was going to ask you this, but I'm going to do it. Minnesota next week. How about a prediction? Give me a score.
I don't know what the spread is.
14.5.
14.5, that seems high. So I'm going to go with Penn State 28, Minnesota 20.
Ooh, I think if Penn State plays well, and I'm scared about whether they do or not, I think they could, I don't want to say blow them out, but I think they could win the game comfortably if they play well, which, again, not great competition the last couple of weeks, but I think they've been executing so well. I think if they do that, they'll play well enough to beat the spread. I will make my official prediction, though, later in the week. Thank you, Steve. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.